Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad you chose to join us. The scheduled show tonight, The Joy of Living, Postponing the Afterlife, a book by Barry Eaton, is the topic, and our guest is Barry Eaton. He's calling in from Australia, but we have not made contact with him yet. But before we delve into that, I wanted to talk about the idea of a soul, your soul, my soul, this soul persona that we all have, and what our soul has to offer us. When you think about a soul, it's so categorically different than anything we've experienced in our ego or in our mind. If we think about how we go about our day, we get up in the morning, we have a morning ritual, we get ready for work, whatnot, and we proceed through the day and we make most of our decisions in our mind. We have most of our intentions in our mind, and that's all fine and dandy. That's a very good thing. Being a functional human being is a very key aspect to honoring our potential. But when we talk about the soul nature, the idea that there's this soul persona, if you will, behind the mask, behind the story that our ego thinks we are. When we talk about a soul is very profound in several key areas. One of them is a soul does not have any fear. A soul does not have any fear about the future, about the past, about the present. The soul understands the timeless nature of our divine consciousness. In other words, no matter what happens in this physical world, we continue on. There's continuity of life for all of us, period, end of story. You are safe. You are secure. Well, the ego is tied up with this idea that, well, there's a me here, and if I die, this me goes away, and then I'm dead. Well, sure, the ego sense of self is attached to this physical being. And, you know, I mean, because if you think about it, when you were born, you didn't have an ego. You didn't have an ego at all, none, zippo. And in your family of origin, your caregivers taught you how to think, taught you what a symbol is, or words, associations. They taught you what to value. That's very important to understand the makeup of your perception of yourself. And as you grew an ego, your soul was there from before you were born, the moment of your birth, through your upbringing to this present moment, through the rest of your life, and continues on after you pass in this life. Your soul has no concern or worry about any of that. And yet so often when I talk to people, they're like, well, I'm afraid I might have a difficulty in my life, or I might not live very long, or there's a history of a hereditary trait of XYZ in our family. And there's a lot of concern about the preservation of self from the ego's perspective. But a soul doesn't have that. When we talk about your soul, Your soul is such a multidimensional being, and to really honor what that means, to understand what that means is to let go of this idea that the life that we see outside of us is some discernment of the truth, some discernment of quote reality. Our eyes feed our ego symbols, and our symbol is always busy discerning them and quantifying them and assigning importance to them. And our ego is very much attached to what's happening outside of us. But in the multidimensional aspect of our soul, Now, this takes a little bit of mind stretching to really wrap your noggin around. In the multidimensional aspect of our soul, all of our lifetimes are available as a source of wisdom, as a source of opportunity, as a source of even replication, if you will. Many times we've had people on the show that talk about the Akashic Records. The Akashic Records, from the soul's perspective. So let's imagine yourself, myself, we're human beings, and we have this history of lifetimes. We have a history of lifetimes behind us. And for many of us, we've played out many, many, many archetypes. Many of the lifetimes, we were the authority, we were the king, we were the mayor, we were the president. And you flip that over, and many lifetimes were spent as a peasant, as a servant, as the common man. So these are snapshots that the Akashic Records hold. Now, those examples were given in from a tribal perspective, the idea of a ruling party, you know, royalty or a government or a religion or something like that. And then the common man, and that distinction there is a collective perception. But we could even drill down farther into your own persona. So if I were to ask you right now in this lifetime, what archetypes do you have going? What would your friends say? If we gathered your close friends and said, write down archetypes about you. Write down the prominent archetypes. Oh, he's strong. He's brave. He has that warrior archetype, loving and caring, such a warm and loving mother archetype. Or archetypes are as very, very broad and diverse. But just to look at them in general, you can see each one of them has a snapshot of attributes. The strong, the courageous, is able to see chaos and yet conjure up an idea and then strong arm, if you will, through that and create a totally different outcome, becoming victorious from the challenge, the threat, the potential demise. The archetype of a hero or a superhero, where the common man can't see an answer and there's this great peril hanging over the collective. And boy, howdy, we're all going to take the brunt of this terrible thing coming. And the hero steps up and says, what the hell? Why are we putting up with this? And dons a completely different perspective. These are all archetypes. And what does archetypes have to do with Akashic Records from the soul's perspective? I love this conversation. So if you think about it, you're a soul now. You've conjured up an archetype in this lifetime. You're propagating through your life. And if you're listening to this radio show, I suggest to you, your life has some changes coming from your soul's perspective. We talk about power. We talk about entitlement in a divine way. We talk about sovereignty and dominion over your life purpose. We talk about the immense power that the divine consciousness gives every single one of us. These are very, very, very powerful attributes. Very powerful attributes. And some of the archetypes that we might assign to these might not be prominent in our mythology. In other words, the roles we're going to play out as souls in this next chapter of our human story perhaps has not been mirrored in the mythology of our human story. Because if you look at the environment we're in now, those that have gone before us, Buddha, Jesus, Gandhi, I mean, name them all, and none of them had Twitter. None of them. They didn't have Twitter. They didn't have computer graphics. They didn't have MP3 players. We're in a very, very ripe time of our human story, and I suggest to you that there's going to be some very powerful archetypes, a very powerful personas that come out of this karmic cooker, if you will. So what I suggest to you is when you consider your lifetime from your soul's perspective, loosen up your mind. Loosen up your mind and let it be soft about what's possible. So often our Western mind wants to see the highway all the way to the destination. We want to see the whole flight of steps. And our soul's like, come on, trust us. We got some serious fun to have here. So, hey, it looks like Barry might have joined us. Let's see if we can bring him on the show. Barry, is this you?
It is me, Les, and I apologize for my lateness. We've been having a few communication problems, but here I am, and lovely to be with you.
Hey, you know, I was looking over your book today, The Joy of Living, Postponing the Afterlife, and boy, howdy, what a story. What a story. It's so compelling on several fronts that I'm really curious to get into this with you. Can you give our listeners kind of an overview of the book so we can have some context to our conversation?
Yeah, sure. Well, in 2013, Les, I was attending a family funeral and came back and found that I had something stuck in my throat, I thought. And I went to the doctor, I found out it was a tumor. And that it was actually cancer. So then I was faced with the thought of, well, what do I do? I'd have to have the tumor out. But then after that, of course, the medical system wanted me to go down the path of chemotherapy or radiotherapy or radiation. And I was not at all interested in that at first because I'm far more into natural healing methods and whatever. So I was faced with this quandary, what do I do? So at that stage, I did what any person in my position would do. I went into deep meditation and connected with my guides and my helpers on the other side and asked for help, and also went into my own intuitive side of things to work out what I really wanted to do. So that was the story in a nutshell then. That's where it all went to from there is what happened and eventually resulted in writing a book called The Joy of Living. But that's how it all got going. And The Joy of Living is actually the story from go, well, not through to woe because I'm still here, but basically the story of what happened.
Right. Well, you bring a very personal perspective to your journey. I mean, it's a very descriptive tale about the whole process of going through the cancer treatment and how it deeply imprinted you throughout the journey. It's a very compelling story. So to turn around and write a book about joy of living, can you share with us how your perception of life changed through that process?
Well, I'd already published a couple of books on the afterlife and No Goodbye, so I'm very much into that very spiritual area. I'm also, apart from my broadcasting, radio and television career, I studied astrology and branched out into psychic work and medium work and whatever. And so that's a very important part of where I'm heading. But The Joy of Living was originally titled Postponing the Afterlife, because I really had no intention of writing my next book from the afterlife. I wanted to make sure that it was from this side of the veil, shall we say. But the book, I didn't sort of set out from the beginning thinking, oh, yes, let's see if we can make a few dollars out of this cancer story. That was very much a spiritual direction, because in my early part of the journey, as I mentioned before, I went into a series of deep meditations and connected with my guides, and I was given pretty explicit instructions as to what they wanted me to do. And they wanted me to combine holistic treatments, mind, body, and spirit holistic treatments, along with mainstream medicine. Now, at that particular time, I was not really wanting to go down the track of mainstream medicine. In fact, my family thought, well, that's it. You know, he'll never do this. We'll go off and find him up in a mountain in a cave somewhere at some stage, and that'll be it. So when I got these very explicit instructions from my people on the other side saying, well, yeah, we want you to combine. We'll help you. We'll work with you on the holistic side of things, but we want you to also combine it with mainstream. And I thought, well, my intuition said, screamed at me, no chemotherapy. So they said to me, okay, no, we're quite happy to go with your intuition on that one. But we feel that radiotherapy or radiation combined with a whole series of holistic treatments and spiritual practices will be what is the best result for you. And at the end of that, we want you to write a book about it. Now, that was the first thing I mean, you don't go into cancer diagnosis thinking, I'm going to write a book. It was the last thing I was thinking about. In fact, I was still putting together the final stages of my book, No Goodbyes. It was at the editors and whatever. So I was still very much caught up with that particular book. So that's how it evolved, Les. I wanted to call it Postponing the Afterlife, but the publishers decided that they wanted to get something in there. So the joy of living emerged. And I do believe when I think about it, and I thought about it afterwards, that it was a bit of a boot from the afterlife people, my spirit people there, to talk about the joy of living. And so many people don't get a lot of joy out of living. And to be able to express that, to find out how you can get through these terrible, terrible times, and then find a joy, a new joy in life itself, I think that title really came from our spirit guidance on the other side, and I'm very happy to work with that one, even though it wasn't my idea originally. The publishers came up with it, with a little bit of a nudge, I think, from spirit.
Sure. So you had a metaphysical perspective before you even came into this cancer chapter of your life. Is that right?
Oh, very much so. I'd gone through a marriage breakup in 1990. And at that stage, I was working on commercial radio doing a callback show and having lots of guests and lots of different studio guests as well as call-ins. And some of the guests included a numerologist and then an astrologer and then a clairvoyant. And I started to get very interested in these things. So when I was working then on a full-time program with a clairvoyant where she was doing the on-air contact and I was basically just the studio presenter and host of the show. And she said to me on air one night, you know, you're going to be doing this sort of stuff yourself soon. And I said, oh, yeah, oh, give me a break. At that stage, I was running a media relations company. I was doing video production. I was doing a radio program. And I was also doing voice work for a television station. I was working 80 hours a week. And here she's saying to me, you're going to be doing this as well. I thought, oh, yeah, right. When am I going to sleep? But it turned out she was right. And she was a very good psychic, very good clairvoyant. And after the marriage breakup, I really was inspired to move in a new direction. So I went off and studied astrology. That was in 1991. So I've been a practicing astrologer and psychic, and then that opened up into medium work as well in the late 90s when my partner passed over. And when I was in contact with her, that's how Afterlife, my first book, came into being. So I've managed to combine working in radio, television, bit of theatre and everything as well at the time, along with my metaphysical side. But now, in recent years, the metaphysical side has become more and more and more important in my life.
Sure, it sounds like it. And what you were saying earlier really kind of struck a chord with me. So you're coming into this unknown part of your life about experiencing cancer, and your guides are saying, well, you know, you're going to write a book when you're done. And it's like, does that mean I make it through the journey? are you giving me...
Look, Les, you've hit the nail on the head there, because I thought afterwards, hey, if they want me to write a book, that means I'm going to get through all of this. Not that I ever feared that I was going to lose the battle. And even if I did, having written about and connected and do talks and all sorts of things about the afterlife, work on afterlife conferences out here and everything, I had no fear at all about passing over. But I never, ever felt at any stage that I was going to lose the battle. I always knew I would get through it. But writing the book, I was going to say the final nail in the coffin, but that's not a good analogy, is it?
Well, you're here talking, so that's a good sign how it turned out.
Yes, that's me talking.
Did your awareness, your clarity, your confidence, perhaps in the psychic and medium aspect of yourself, get a real boost going through this deep struggle with yourself?
Well, I think this happens at various times in our life, and if we're open to these spiritual directions or whatever, when we reach, and astrologically we can always pinpoint them because they're transformational points, and when we hit these transformational points, we get an opportunity to move on, to grow, to develop. That doesn't mean to say it's going to happen. It's still our free will, our choice as to whether we're going to accept this and move with it. And just because the door of opportunity is open doesn't mean to say that everybody walks through it quite gladly and embraces the change. In fact, you know, change is something that people are usually pretty terrified about in many ways. But for me, yes, it was a transformational time, just like the transformational time at the end of my marriage in 1990 transformed me into the beginnings of my real spiritual exploration. I won't say spiritual journey because everybody on the planet's on a spiritual journey. We're in a human body to have an experience here. But that transformational point was the first of several, and this was definitely getting the cancer and going through that whole experience was definitely a part of my transformation as a person, because you don't go into something like this thinking, oh, well, I'll get over cancer, I'll get over whatever it is I'm having in my life. It may not be cancer, it may be any other kind of really, really heavy experience you're having. You don't get over this and think, okay, I'm going to go back to doing exactly what I did before.
Right.
That is, if you do not wish to, that is if you want to change, if you want to open a new direction. If you wanted to go back and lead your previous life, then that's up to you. It's free will, but it's not going to work. It really is not going to work.
Sure. You know, a friend of mine, I share a lot of the same history you do in the sense of working in broadcasting. I've worked in broadcast television for 30 years. And one of the guys had started pretty much the same time I did. And we walked side by side with each other at many television stations doing countless shows. We worked on the engineering side behind the cameras. And my soul showing me this vision for my life about more and more TV and media in my life. And here's my friend, my very dear spiritual brother friend. And earlier this year, he got cancer. And I, you know, it was really weird because I said to myself, well, his soul's just trying to scare the shit out of him and wake him up. And
Probably did that as well.
Well, he went through cancer and I thought, okay, we're done. Yeah. We can get on with the story. And then he had this seemingly trivial relapse. And in like no time, he passed away. And it's so clean my clock about the volatility of life. And the reason I bring that up is I mean, the joy of living is, I think part of that is appreciating breathing in a body. I mean, even if you're in a transition point or if you're in the middle of struggle, at least you got some skin in the game, pardon the pun. And so that's what I like about your perception is you went through that and then to turn around and come out the other side and share it with others. That's got to be that's got to have impacted you on so many different levels.
Well, it has, Les, and you'd be pretty sick if you didn't open yourself up to this sort of thing. But some people are very, very stubborn, as we know, and they just do not like to change, do not want to change. But that's their prerogative. But as far as I'm concerned, yes, my life changed. It changed enormously in that intervening time, not only as far as a book is concerned, but with me personally and my relationship with my family and my lovely partner, Anne, who is my co-writer, as well as being my my partner. And all of this changes. And if you don't embrace these changes, then you're battling against what life is all about and what life is offering you. And we're going against here what you referred to as the title of the book there, the joy of living. Because if we're not embracing that joy, what on earth are we doing here? We're not embracing life itself, the purpose of our life. It's interesting that one of the things in my book, No Goodbyes, I work with a team of spirits on the other side, a group at various levels in the afterlife. There are many, many different levels there, just the same as there are so many socioeconomic levels on earth. And these spirits, highly advanced, some of them, others not so advanced, get together and sort of provided me with all sorts of information. And one of those sources of information was they brought up the whole thing about euthanasia, for instance. Now, we are going here in Australia at the present stage. One of our states is really pushing for euthanasia, and it's passed the lower house of Parliament, and now it's heading towards being passed by the Senate. And whether or not that gets through, there's a lot of controversy about it. I always had an open mind about this, but my spirit team said to me, no, it's not the right thing to do, because sometimes in those last, and quite often, in those last very stressful times, as you're lying there or whatever you're going through, this can be some of the greatest life lessons that you've needed to learn in this particular lifetime. Now, if you don't have that experience, then your soul is not going to be developed enough to be able to move on to the next stage, which is what this life was about. So you may well have to come back and repeat it next time around in similar or different circumstances even. So this whole area of embracing life and all its difficulties, it's not just the joys. We're not just here to have a fun time and you know, drink as much champagne and enjoy ourselves as much as possible before we kick off the mortal coil. No, we're here to develop as a soul, and that's the whole purpose of it, a soul over many, many, many lifetimes. I'm actually writing a book at the moment, my next book, about reincarnation and past lives. So it's all part of the huge journey that we as a soul go through, an individual soul, a unique journey that's ours and ours alone. So it ties into a very big picture there, Les, and it's all connected. My friends on the other side talk about it as the tapestry, and we are part of a vast universal tapestry. But while we're busily weaving away our little bit in the corner there, there's all sorts of threads leading off in many, many different directions. And I love that analogy, that life is part of a universal tapestry, and we're just one of many, many billions and billions and billions of souls in the universe, creating our own little part of that tapestry.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, I kind of agree with them in the sense that the idea that you can check out early because you want to, I mean, letting the ego have the switch, if you will, is exactly like you said. I recently went to a men's group, and there's these men here that were very well to do. I mean, as far as a roof over their head and healthy food to eat and whatnot, half the world would envy their position. And yet they were so full of despair and distraught that they would have taken that option. And their hearts weighed so heavily because of a condition in their life. And I just like what your guides were saying is, it's kind of a pressure, like a karmic pressure on ourselves to push us past our hang up so we can have that transformational experience.
Yeah, this is so true. This is so true. And you know, the whole object of life, as I said, is the progression of the soul. And if we don't work in with that, then it's almost like taking a job and getting a contract for that job, Les. And the contract says that you will work for this company for the next 12 months, 2 years, 5 years, whatever. And then halfway through the contract, you either get a better offer or you're really unhappy, you're pretty miserable, it's not working out, your partner hates it, you're working too hard, it's putting stress on you. So you turn around and bail out of the contract. Now, there's got to be repercussions on that contract. There's got to be repercussions. You have not fulfilled your side of the bargain.
Right.
And if it applies to a job, then why wouldn't it apply to life itself? If we have a life contract, which I firmly believe we do have a life contract, you bail out on that, there has to be some kind of repercussion.
Right. Well, so these you've mentioned these transition points in your life. Do you have a different perspective from the idea of going through a transition like that, as far as not only is it a challenging time, but there's opportunity to it?
Well, every transition has to have some kind of challenge to it. Otherwise, we really don't learn. We learn through adversity. I read that many years ago. Somebody was channeling some angelic forces, and they were saying that human beings, humanity has decided to advance through adversity. And when you think about it, that really hit home to me, that statement. When I think about it, if things are flowing along beautifully, easily, we're not learning, we're not growing, we're not doing anything. We're just rolling with the tide there and having a great old time. It's only when things go wrong, it's only when we have some barriers thrown up against us, it's only when we have problems, we make a mistake, whatever, that's when we start to learn, that's when we start to grow. Otherwise, we just drift along quite happily.
Sure. And with so much turmoil, upheaval in our collective experience on this planet, talk about a soul's journey to learn, to master. I like the notion that perhaps planet Earth is maybe the most advanced classroom for karma and discovering the light of love in the chaos of a karmic tsunami. That our soul chose this lifetime for very powerful lessons.
Well, this is true. I mean, every single one of us comes here with some kind of karma. Now, that karma, if you're a brand new soul, and there are new souls being created all the time, obviously we can't just sort of keep on circulating recycling the same old people all the time. We've got 7.5, nearly 8 billion people on the planet now. We'll have 9 billion by about the year 2025. There's got to be new people coming from somewhere. Some come from other worlds. Some are being created. Now, the very new ones don't have a huge amount of karma, but they are coming here with a purpose. And then when they have that first life, they have a little bit of karma. But for those of us who've done many, many, many lives, we have got accumulated karma. We might be clearing a karma from back in the days, you know, when we were living in the Middle Ages or in Roman times or Egyptian times or whatever. There might be still some residual karma from there. So we have all of this, and this accumulates. And even those people that are coming in as souls that have been working and living in other worlds, they've brought other kinds of karma, other kinds of areas that they need to learn, to develop, to grow. And Earth, I think that story of yours about Earth being a highly advanced school for karma experience is brilliant, because many other people sort of think of Earth as far as the evolution of the universe is concerned and the state of the universe is sort of being in a very much a 101 sort of stage, that we are really at the base area of learning in this third dimensional area. We've got so many ways that we can move on, and once we move out of this third dimensional reality, then life is going to change enormously for us all. But we've got to get through the whole thing first of all, and that may take many thousands and thousands of lifetimes.
Well, if all of us were glowing orbs of unconditional love, we wouldn't need saviors, we wouldn't need heroes, we wouldn't need spiritual messengers, if you will. And yet, Jesus came, and we're still talking about him 2,000 years later. It's, for me, working with television transmitters was a real curious thing because it taught me about the power of potential. If, like I was saying, if we're all divine beings in unconditional love, there's nothing to learn. There's no challenge. We're all anchored in our truth. But after thousands of lifetimes, how can you play out a victim role or a role as a slave if you're a divine being with immense amount of power that goes along with that? You had to get to a point of forgetting. And so to go into darkness, you're creating a difference, a potential, a karmic tension, if you will, from your truth. And here, 7 billion people have done that in spades for eons of time. Now to come to Earth and break up that stigma and know the truth of who you are and then language it without hesitation or pause, that's a lesson that hasn't been repeated in our mythology by perhaps just a handful of people, and the rest of us saw them in awe. So I would suggest this is really a very advanced place to learn how to embody unconditional love.
Yeah, that's very true, because if we had have embodied it completely and fully, then most of us, well, we wouldn't need to come here. That's
right.
Not to say that there aren't beings here that are having that wonderful ability, because they are scattered among us for sure, and they are helping, and they're doing everything to help in the transformation of this planet, the uplifting of our consciousness. You know, we're starting to get into a whole deeper area here, but there are many, many wonderful beings around here. But for the vast majority of us, you know, we're struggling with that karma that we've brought back from so many lifetimes, and we're struggling, and we will continue to struggle until we recognize this, realize it, accept it, and do something about it. It gets back to the whole area that I'm so concerned with, shall we say, and it gets back to my book, The Joy of Living, or our book and my book, about self-responsibility. I was encouraged to take self-responsibility for my decisions there. Too many people in this day and age want somebody else to do it for them. Oh, it's not my fault. I can't do this. The government should be doing something to help me. Why isn't the government doing more? Why are we paying so much for power prices? Why isn't the government doing something about it? Well, why aren't we as individuals accepting what we can do about it? And maybe if our energy bills are high, maybe we don't use the air conditioning as much. Maybe we look at putting solar in. Maybe we look at many different things, but taking responsibility instead of saying, somebody else, please do it for me. And that, getting back to what I did in the book, was I ended up taking responsibility for the decisions that I was going to make for my life. I did not want to give my power away to some doctor or a series of doctors or whatever and say, okay, you do it. You heal me. I'm just sort of going to sit in the sidelines. It's all up to you.
Right. Yeah.
You give your power
right.
away. You become a victim. And so many of us have done that. I mean, I urge everybody who's going through any kind of situation, whether like me with cancer or many other life-saving or life-threatening areas, take some responsibility for yourself, for your own actions and what you can do about it, and not just play the victim. Oh, poor me. There are so many victims out there. Oh, poor me. Why not get up off your backside and do something instead of just whinging and carrying on like a miserable little clown?
Right. Indeed.
I know I'm on a soapbox here, Les, but it's something that I feel strongly about, and it's something that my spirit team also have mentioned in my previous books about us taking responsibility. And I think that was part of a lesson that I accepted and undertook in my cancer journey, of learning to accept responsibility and doing something about it. I'm really very, very sort of very thing about that, Les.
No, I like it. I like the passion of what you're saying. You know, in the book, you talk about the traditional medicine treatment of cancer and then the holistic side of it, and talk about taking ownership. It's like you walk that fine line of embracing both of them. And I think that's a powerful story in and of itself. I mean, in the beginning of the book, you talk about some of the numbers behind how many people have cancer and the percentage of people that are successful with it. This is something that lands in many, many households all over the world. Cancer touches so many walks of life. And for you to kind of take each step with that personal acceptance of responsibility, take each step with that personal acceptance of choice, and handpick what part of the Western treatment that you decided, and handpick the side of the holistic, that's owning your condition right there, and showing up and taking responsibility and accountability to yourself. That's a beautiful story that your book has to tell others going through the same journey.
Yeah. Well, thank you, because that's a very important point that I wanted to get across. And as far as the holistic side of things, I did receive a heck of a lot of help. Once I asked for it and I agreed to it, things just sort of happened, as it does when you're on track. Things fell into place. Like, for instance, I'd been to John of God in Brazil back in 2008 and was working with some people out here in doing some of the work in Australia as well. And there are things called crystal beds. Now, the crystal bed at the castle where I am, people used to go on it, and it's a wonderful way of balancing your chakras through crystal energy. And it comes from Brazil, from the John of God castle there. And it just so happened, by a strange quirk of coincidence, that as I was preparing for my note, the small note of cynicism in my voice, it just so happened that at that particular time I was preparing to have my cancer or whatever, they had power problems and couldn't use the crystal bed. So they said, why don't you take it for a while? So I was given the crystal bed to be able to set up at my home, and I prepared myself for the onslaught of the radiotherapy. And in between times, I would come back after a week at the hospital and be able to use this bed to be able to balance myself, to cleanse myself in many ways. Now, people might be thinking, oh, that's all right for him. Yeah, he gets a bed given to him, whatever. But there are plenty of people out there with these crystal beds, for instance, that if you get on and Google them, you'll find that there are practitioners all over the world. And you can do something for yourself, once again, by getting out there. And if that is your... I'm not saying that you got to do what I did. Not at all. My journey is my journey. But the various other things that happened. I for instance, when I was going to have to have the radiotherapy, because I had to have this huge mask put over my face and shoulders and bolted down onto the tray, and because the treatment I was having was called a TOMO, T-O-M-O, and which was invented in the States, by the way, a few years ago. And this was a very fine computer-driven area that they could target, a very, very, very fine area of my throat to be able to target the tumor there so that it wasn't going to affect my vocal cords or my lymph nodes or anything like that, so I'd then be able to continue my broadcasting work. Now, my footsteps were led in the direction of this hospital in the first place to come up and live where I am at the moment, because that hospital is the closest thing. If I was still back where I was living before, I would have had to have gone from one side of the city to another every day. It would have been about a 2.5-hour drive each way just to have a treatment. I probably wouldn't have done it. I would have just gone off to somewhere a lot easier. So my footsteps were led in this direction. Then, knowing that I was going to have this mask put on, just a few months beforehand, I was contacted by a lady who's a wonderful hypnotherapy expert, a hypnotherapist, and she specializes in trauma hypnotherapy. And she contacted me out of the blue for my radio program. I've got my own radio program called Radio Out There on the internet. And Judith contacted me. She said, I've never done this in my life before. I don't know why I'm doing it, but I feel as if I need to contact you and just get in touch. So we got in touch. She came on my radio program, had a guest appearance. She's fantastic. When it came time to preparing for this mask. I thought, oh my God, being bolted into a mask for 35 different treatments of radiotherapy, I'm going to end up with claustrophobia here. So I rang Judith and she said, come on up. So I went up to her, she lives in the mountains up in Queensland. So I went up to her clinic and had hypnotherapy. Totally prepared me for everything to be able to cope with this whole thing. If I hadn't have done that, who knows what I may have done. But another door was opened by my spirit guides. They said they would help me. And these are just two examples of various things that happened. Healers came out of the blue and just said, oh, we heard you're having a problem, we'll send you some healing. Another healer was giving me energy clearing healings after each week of treatment. All of these things happened. Now, okay, this is my journey. As I said, I don't expect people to do exactly what I did. I'm only writing to help inspire people. But when you start opening up to these things and asking for help, ask. I always believe you don't ask, you don't get. And when I contacted my guides and they said they would help me, anybody can do that. We've all got guides. Anybody can.
Right.
Please, I need some help. Please help me to help myself. Not just help me, not just, oh, send everybody. No, please help me to help myself. That was what I put out there. And it worked. It really did work. So
right.
And these are just a couple. I've written them in detail in the book, The Joy of Living. I've written in detail about some of these other areas that have opened up and the spiritual side of things and whatever. But it boiled back to what I said before about self-responsibility, not giving my power away. I could easily have done that. And I had some wonderful doctors, some wonderful people in the hospital I worked with in the end. They were really, really great, lovely people. But if I had have just totally given myself over to that, I think my end result, shall we say, would potentially be very different to the way it is now.
Well, I really like two things you're saying here, and one of them is to ask your guides on the other side for help. Help me, help me. And
help me
you're
to help
also,
myself.
That's right. Well, and you also said that not only having your guides help you, but for you to listen intuitively, and these opportunities would come along. The hypnotherapist and the crystal beds were opportunities that existed. So had you just surrendered to the Western doctors and said, well, show up at the clinic at 8 o'clock every day, and that's all you did, and you kind of shut down your intuition, it would have been a strictly
yep.
Western experience. And like you just said, the outcome would have been noticeably different. But not only did you ask for help, and then you stayed open to the guidance in the journey, and you said the listener is going to have a different experience. Not everybody's going to have the same experience as you. That's kind of the chemistry of it all right there, is to ask for that, the wisdom from the other side, and then be open enough and motivated enough to follow through with that inspiration. I think that's kind of the gist of what your book's talking about, is that blend between Western and metaphysical approach.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I realized afterwards, when I thought about it, Les, that having written about both sides, that was what they wanted me to put that point across, because not many people are going to sort of be going down the straight alternative or natural path. It's there, it's available, and if that's your choice, go for it. But basically, I believe that I got helped a lot from Spirit, because they wanted me to get that message out of combining holistic and mainstream medicine. And that's going to have a far greater impact on the average person than just turning around and saying, oh, yes, I went up and went into a cave and ate raw vegetables for 6 months.
Right.
That doesn't work out. And the interesting thing is also that when you go to John of God, I presume you know a little bit about John of God, do you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. So when you go down there, they do not ever say to you, you must not go back into the doctor or hospital. They encourage the combination of spiritual healing and medical healing. They never, ever say, don't go to your doctor, stop the treatment, don't take the medicine, whatever. They believe that it's a combination of both. And I think that's an extension of why I was encouraged to go down this path, because I'd already had a huge experience, which I've written about in detail in The Joy of Living. I had a wonderful, amazing spiritual experience when I was in Brazil there, a connection with the spirit doctors. And I honestly believe that was all part of the whole thing, that they wanted me to get these messages across, to help people, once again, to ask for help for themselves, to help themselves.
Right. Well, I like that. So you've got another book in the queue that you're writing now on reincarnation. Have you had your numerology or astrological chart? Do you have more transitions come in? Are you going to get some shoulder pads and a helmet for a couple of these? And what's the future look like for you?
Well, at the moment I'm in a bit of a hiatus period while I finish this book, but no, it's I look at astrology. My partner Anne, who co-wrote the book with me, and I've got to say that Anne and my son Matt were both fantastic in my whole area of support and everything like that. And without the help of a carer, a caregiver, then the whole thing is different. It really, you're on your own. You need some kind of help, and I cannot endorse enough the people that are working as caregivers or caretakers, as you call them in the States. These people do a fantastic job, and to do this on your own without a caregiver, I'm just so thankful that I had my partner and my son and other members, of course, of my family and friends there as well, in incredible support. To be able to have all of this, it's just absolutely brilliant. And I've forgotten the original question you were asking me.
No, I mean, I think you touched on it. So a lot of times when we go through heavy trauma, it can kind of galvanize us, where we if we lose our job or go through a transition point where we just have to buckle up and kind of slug our way through a chapter. Sometimes we don't ever really get back around to fully recovering to that point of that. I like the idea of a joyful child who's sincerely, just genuinely, innocently excited about the birthday party, the new pony or whatever. And when you go through such a challenging part of your life, I mean, the title of the book, The Joy of Living, what do you do to revitalize your spirit, your spark after an event like that?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. And I think that it boils down to the fact of appreciating everything that's happened in your life and looking at it and not, as I said before, expecting to just, oh, well, I'll get through all this and I'll go back and do exactly what I did before. And I've seen people do this, and they have not prospered well afterwards. It's accepting that you are going to change, accepting that you need to take a new direction, accepting that this has been, that there's been a reason for this incredible thing that's happened to you. I believe that everything happens for a reason in our life, and when we start to think about it, and maybe with the benefit of 2020 hindsight years down the track, you realize, yes, oh, so that's why that happened. Oh yes, getting back to what I said about the tapestry of life before, there is a reason for everything, and once we can accept these things and work with them instead of fighting against them, we can sort of move along and develop in our lives. And I remember the question you asked me before about my next direction, and that's all part of it. And I've opened up into new directions since, and I'm just about to make some big changes in my life for 2018 too, part of which is releasing this book that I'm writing at the moment, and I hope to have finished by Christmas, on past lives and reincarnation. But there's lots of other things. But it's taken me down new directions and new paths in life and new potentials. rather than just going back and trying to recapture what you used to have. That's the past. The past is gone. In astrology, we look at what we call a Plutonian transformation. Pluto, the planet of transformation, even though some strange sort of astronomers turn around and say Pluto's not a planet. We astrologers disagree. It's a very, very powerful influence in our lives and in our charts. And I do astrology work, and Anne, my partner, who co-wrote it with me, is a numerology expert. So we combine the power of planets and numbers. And we can look and see what may be ahead of us. We can look and see, yes, that's a transformational time. We can look and say, oh, yes, this could be a challenging time ahead. But it's how that plays out in our life varies with every single person, according to the circumstances of your life, according to who you are, what you've embraced, and what you're prepared to embrace. Everybody has their own unique path in life. And once we can accept that, then we can embrace, so we can move on, and we can create new directions, exciting new directions, and really get into and fully appreciate and live the joy of living.
Very well said. Well, an hour can slip by pretty fast. I want to make sure we give our listeners contacts to your book, to your radio out there, radio show. Tell us how to get your book and about your show.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Liz. My radio program is the best way to connect. It is Radio Out There. There are three words, Radio Out There, but they're all joined together. So there's two O's and two T's, radiooutthere.com. And it's an internet program that I put together every week. It's free of charge. People can just get on. It's podcast if you wish. I've got lots and lots of wonderful guests that just, I'm sure, the way you do. There are so many people out there that you want to help get the message out there. I've also got a section on my books and on the joy of living. The best way to get hold of the book in the States is probably online. I know it's in several bookstores, but I just don't know the names of bookstores in the States. Being in Australia, I'm a long, long way away. But
sure,
the best way would be to go on to something like Amazon or Book Depository, what? Barnes & Noble. Also, for those people who read Nexus magazine, which has been re-released in the States, I do a bit of work with Nexus magazine as well. You can actually contact them, and they've got copies of the book. So there are plenty of them around, and we'd love to be able to know that it's helping people in some way. And if people want to get in touch with me, I do consultations as well on astrology and whatever. And there's a contact through the radio program.
Well, very nice. Barry, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. It's been a pleasure spending this time with you. You have a very powerful story, and thank you for sharing it with our guest tonight.
Well, thank you, Les, for the opportunity of speaking to you and also your audience. And I just hope that in some way that I can encourage them to be able to take that responsibility for yourself, because that's what it's all about. Don't give your power away.
I like that. We've been talking to Barry Eaton, and the topic tonight has been the joy of living, postponing the afterlife. You know, life's a exciting thing when you show up for it. There's this infinite well of wisdom and inspiration that is available to you if you intend it, if you choose to engage it. And it gets you out of your mind, and it brings the immense wisdom of your heart and your soul into your everyday life. And your heart and your soul, you know, your soul has that vision. It knows about next week and next month. It knows about what you would be happy with. It knows about what you prefer and what you don't prefer. When you get ideas and inspiration and visions from your soul, they're already pre-vetted. Your ego doesn't have to figure anything out. It just has to show up. Hey, you know, it's my pleasure bringing you episodes like this one here tonight. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.